and welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. We have entered into this weird kind of UVA purgatory where it's finals break. UVA's in a bowl game for football, but that's not for a couple weeks. They got the holidays coming up. It's just this kind of weird, you know, season of UVA athletics. But living in that is Greg Medea from the Daily Progress joining me back here. If I could give you 10 guesses out of 10, who would be on the podcast? You know, I like to say we have a lot of variety, but if you guess Greg Medea, probably at least one or two times out of 10, you'd be right.
Yeah. At some point, I'm going to have to start charging you in the saber.
Yeah. Talk to Chris.
An appearance fee. No, I do it out of the kindness of my heart. But thanks for having me back. Always good to be with you. It's like you said, downtime. A little bit of downtime, at least on the surface, for the Hoos basketball team. Big game Saturday against Maryland, right? Interesting, you know, renewal of a rivalry series, right?
Big is a very kind gesture to the Terrapins in the season that they're having. I did watch some of their game against Michigan, but let that one off the hook.
Yeah, they've not been good in their first year under Buzz, but that and then the Gator Bowl. I think there's some excitement there. Yeah. I know a lot of Virginia fans would have loved this week, right, to be getting ready for a playoff game. That would have been very neat. Unfortunately for the Hoos, it did not happen, right? They blew the chance down in Charlotte against Duke, a team they'd beaten earlier in the season just a few weeks before, and they missed that shot. All in all, I still think pretty successful regular season for the Cavaliers, you know, finishing with 10 wins, getting to the ACC title game, and they get to go to a Gator Bowl. And I don't know if we were talking about this or I was talking about it with somebody else, but it's like if you would have told Virginia fans at the beginning of the year, you'd win 10 games, you'd be in Charlotte, and then you get to go to Jacksonville for the Gator Bowl, I think they would have signed up for it based on the previous few years.
Yeah.
What's tough is like the playoff opportunity was right there.
Yeah. I think, you know, in time, this will be reflected on as a very good season for Virginia. We gotta hit that time first. But yeah, like you said, less than 2 weeks out from the Gator Bowl at this point, UVA practicing again. They went back to practice last week, and they head down there on the 23rd for a nice long stay in Jacksonville, Florida. A little bit warmer weather down there, which I know both of us are looking forward to enjoying this December period, especially with the cold and snow that we've gotten in Virginia the last couple of weeks. You mentioned it. A lot going on, not a lot going on the surface, what everyone can see. There's a lot bubbling up underneath the surface. That's kind of what's going on during these few weeks here. We did get a little bit of noise with four players officially. I don't even know. Is it officially their intent to go into the transfer portal?
They're planning.
Yes.
Right. They're planning. I think, I mean, just the most significant is Jason Prevard, who had a – what a good season for Virginia. I thought he was a good player for them. He had, the two big time interceptions, and without him in the Florida State game, right, they don't win that game. Had the two picks in that one. The first one, the Athletic, you know, tipped to himself with Castellanos looking for daylight in the backfield, and then of course the one that Virginia fans will talk about forever, right, is that two handed leaping interception in double overtime. To secure the win over Florida State. So for me, he's a good player. That's a tough loss. I think what makes it a little easier for Virginia, Preston, is Corey Costner has shared time with him lately at that spot. That's, I would say, probably the last, three, four games, maybe since the Cal game last month of the season. I think that's a fair way to put it. So I think they're in an okay spot, even though they're losing him. But he's still a really good player that you'd probably like to have on your team. So tough loss, but Costner has given reason for encouragement. Yeah, he had the interception in the ACC championship game that gave Virginia a little bit of life when things just weren't really going well at all early. Yeah. So there's that. The other players, I think, you know, the writing was kind of on the wall.
Yeah, I think Costner had kind of at least in the last two games against Virginia Tech and Duke, had kind of outplayed Brevard. He got the start against Virginia Tech. That was a discipline issue where Brevard didn't get to start that game. But I think Costner, just the way he kind of came on towards the end of the season, he's one of the probably top guys that I'm most intrigued to see in this bowl game against Missouri, just to see what he does with this opportunity now. He's looked really good down the stretch of this season. He's had the two interceptions, like you mentioned, against Cal and against Duke. So be interested to see just kind of what he can do with a little bit more. I think he was the team's defensive rookie of the year for this
As
year,
he should be, yeah.
as he should be, as one of the guys that has played the most consistently throughout the season. So yeah, and the other ones, just to mention them by name, Tyshawn Wyatt, the transfer from JMU, only played in two games this year. And battled injury issues for the last few years of his career. Mekhi Buchanan, similar story. He's only played 17 games in 3 years at UVA. A lot of injuries. Dre Walker, same thing. 13 games in 3 seasons. I know that when he went into the portal, everyone's like, remember that Boston College game where he had that great interception?
I was there. I do remember.
Exactly. You had the chowder up in the press box beforehand. But yeah, Dre Walker, I was always really hopeful, especially for Walker and Buchanan, that they would turn into something. And I know the coaches were very high on both those guys, just they couldn't stay on the field.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because if you go back to the 2023 season, at the end of those years, you're looking back and like, well, there are a few young guys who've got a shot to really help the program accelerate, and I think both of those guys would have been on the list, as would have right Calandria and Zadarian Harrison, those type guys who were all playing as true freshmen. You think back, Caleb Hardy
Caleb
too.
Hardy, yeah.
You think back now, and it's like they were probably just playing out of necessity. Like you think about Virginia's depth this year compared to 2 years ago, and it's a massive difference, right? Like freshmen really didn't get a chance unless they were that good to compete with veterans, right? Like Costner was able to compete with Prevard, but most of the time when Virginia's going to the bench, it's going to older guys who have played somewhere. Like Jaden Thomas was their fourth or fifth wide receiver, and not a freshman, you know? Just the change in the program, but I think those guys, you know, if they would have stayed healthy, could have had better careers at Virginia, obviously.
Yeah, you look back at that 2023 class because there was a lot of excitement after that season. And like you said, probably a lot of it out of necessity. Cam Robinson, obviously, he's worked out when he's on the
He's
field.
a
He's worked out
player.
pretty well.
Yeah, I keep forgetting he was a freshman that year. He was so good. You know what I mean? You lump him in as an older guy sometimes.
But I mean, you go back and look at it, and like, I mean, there's a lot of excitement about that class, but like, I guess if you look at it, the players that are still kind of making a consistent impact on this team this year, Jason Hammond was in that class, Anthony Britton, those guys have been in the rotation on the defensive line. I think Caleb Hardy kind of reinvented himself now as a
Linebacker.
linebacker, but also, you know, playing a little hybrid too. Can play in that spur spot at times when they need like a bigger look on the field. So they've gotten some guys, but it hadn't turned out to be the class that a lot of people thought it could have been at the time that some of these guys kind of grew up in the program and everything. But yeah, interesting start to the transfer portal season. I mean, like, we laughed because everyone was like, oh, this will make it a lot easier to go through the transfer portal. Like, it's one portal period, doesn't start till January 2nd. And then we saw like an avalanche of like big time quarterbacks go in the portal on Monday. So here we are. It really hadn't slowed anything down.
Well, it kind of felt like the coaching carousel started to settle itself. Michigan, a separate ordeal. But once the coaching carousel stopped, it was like, all right, where are the quarterbacks going to end up? Because those quarterbacks have options, right? Yesterday it was, Raiola at Nebraska, of course, Lagway at Florida, who decided to go into the portal. So there are some big name quarterbacks in the transfer portal, and now it'll be musical chairs and a bidding war to figure out where they're going next.
Even guys that are at their school still haven't gotten in the portal are, you know, being mentioned in the musical chairs right now. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how that all, like, that's like, all right, we got through the coaching carousel, like you said, Michigan outstanding, but now it's going to be onto the quarterback carousel to see how that all kind of fixes itself up. But I know a lot of conversations happening this week and last week and trying to get through those with players right now. And it's weird because like you see an ESPN notification now where so and so has re-signed with his school. Like I understand there's contracts involved, but it's a bizarre wording to kind of be in. I feel like this is the first off season that we've kind of had that terminology be so consistent, you know, like it's been everywhere.
To me it's strange because I guess they do have the option of going in the portal, but like if you're just coming back to the school, is that news? I guess it depends on the caliber of player,
Yeah.
right? It depends on the caliber of player. So I don't know. It's ever changing, ever changing.
Always is. All right. Well, what I want to do, since we kind of have this weird kind of purgatory until we get to the bowl game and we've got the holidays coming up and basketball's off this week, I want to go into a little bit more of a UVA football mailbag. So I put the questions out on the Saber message board. If you're not on the Saber message board, it's a great place to be all year round. You can subscribe and upgrade to the Edge board where we post a lot of, hint or stuff going on with the program, some of the insights into the program and stuff like that, and a lot of our stories and content you can all find there. We also have the free football message board. We got a lot of questions on both of those. So I kind of broke these up into different categories, Greg's, some football based, some roster building based, and some and a fun question at the end. But we'll start with the football base because we don't get to talk a lot about football right now. So let's get into it. So the first one comes from Aishu over on the board, talking about an influx of talent and experience on both sides of the ball this year from last year's portal. How did that affect the play calling and style on both sides of the ball? Kind of goes into more specifics here, but in short, how did the offensive and defensive play styles and play calling reflect what this staff hopes to see in general moving forward? We can kind of take this one at a time if we want to start on the offensive side of the ball with Des Kitchings.
Yeah, I think especially early, what you saw was the ability to kind of do what they wanted at running back on the offensive line, right? I talked to Dez on Friday. I wrote a story about some of the similarities between Missouri and Virginia since Dez and Eli Drinkwitz worked together at NC State, and all the run schemes are pretty similar, almost exactly the same. Anyway, that's not the point, but what I was talking to Dez a little about, he's like, all these years people have been saying, like, when's Virginia gonna run the ball? Like Tony and Dez have talked about how are they gonna run the ball. He's like, this is how we want to run the ball, how they did this year. And we were talking, and it came up that this season were the most rushing yards as a team the Virginia program has had since 2004. So I mean that kind of says how they're committed to running the football. And I think between the depth they added on the O-line and the depth they added at running back, they were finally able to do it, right? The past couple of years, they had been, patchworking offensive lines together at times, depending on who's healthy, who's available, and who's playing well at a particular time. This year, you kind of had an idea of what your starting five would be. And even when Brady Wilson went down, they were able to figure it out. And that's after like the big injuries that they had, in the spring and in the summer, when Monroe Mills got hurt and then McKeelan Thomas got hurt. They were able to make it happen. Boley and Josie were very good. Jack Whitmer, he's probably one of the unsung heroes of the 2025 Virginia football season. Recruited over with Mills and Thomas, and somehow he ended up starting Wallace Unamba too. For a short while, but Whitmer ended up being the guy after he decided to come back. So to me, that's the big difference on offense is they were able to commit to a run to the run. They had a running back who was willing and able to take on a workload, right? You hadn't really seen that from a Virginia running back, and Jamari Taylor provided that for Virginia, going over 1,000 yards this season. They had quality backups in Xavier Brown and Harrison Whaley. Brown got hurt and Whaley was fine down the stretch, right? I thought Whaley was a good player for them down the stretch, particularly as a true backup to Taylor, because I think their skill sets are similar, whereas Xavier Brown and Jamari Taylor's skill sets differ a little bit. Jamari with some inside zone stuff. He could run the wide zone too. Brown great at the wide zone, catch the ball to the backfield. Oh, so to me, they really just made it work with the personnel they had this season. Some willing blockers on the outside helped as well. So that's at least what I saw offensively. And you throw in Chandler Morris's ability off play action, and it really synced up nice at different times this season.
Yeah, I think offensively the running game has been, like Des was alluding to, that's been the question for years now, and that's what Virginia's wanted to get to. And I think they definitely took those steps to get to where this program can run the football effectively in all types of matchups. Like, look no further than that run, that series against Florida State in the second half when Chandler hurt his hand and they have to run the ball 10 straight times and they score a touchdown on that drive. That was probably one of the most iconic drives of the season, if you ask me. And
For
that kind of
sure.
speaks to what this team wants to be able to do. The one thing that I'm curious about is in the passing game. I thought that they left a lot of meat on the bone in the passing game this year. I think Chandler Morris is it was had a good year, but I came into the season and especially early on, I was like, I think these receivers are some of the best in the conference, and Terrell Harris and Jamal Edgerrin and Cam Ross. You know, he struggled with injuries a little bit down the stretch, but I thought they were really, really talented receiving group, and you know, it just didn't seem like they could always get the ball to them in the certain situations when they needed to.
Yeah, I know from my inbox, from seeing what readers would send me, is where are some more throws to Edgerrin? I think that was kind of the bigger question I got as far as the offense goes. But to me, when you're committed to the run and it's working, like I don't know if you'd necessarily need to throw the ball more than Virginia did at times. Maybe in particular situations, if it's you know, whatever the situation is, just to stay unpredictable. But I thought Des did a good job for the most part this year. They had a lull in the middle of the season when I think defenses started to figure out, hey, this is what Virginia's doing with all their new personnel. But he had it rocking and rolling most of the year. I would think the second matchup versus Duke, that's always tough when you're facing an opponent twice. But all things considered, maybe outside of some more targets for Edgerrin, I think it was pretty solid.
Yeah, no, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of people that are, you know, of the belief and mindset right now in the fan base that, you know, they can't achieve what they want to achieve with Des Kitchens as offensive coordinator. But I've kind of said all year that he's made the improvements, he's made the changes with this offense to get them to a level where they could win 10 games. Like, you know,
Yeah.
everyone says it's an easy ACC schedule. Well, guess what? There are 16 other teams that played in the ACC this year. I didn't see
Yeah.
them winning 10 games.
No, and Virginia was the only team, and I know they lost NC State early in the year, but in a regular season ACC schedule, that was a non-ACC game. Virginia was the only 7-1 finisher. Everybody else had two losses or more during a regular season slate. And I don't know. I thought they had a plan offensively. They stuck to it, and it worked for them. With when you have Jamari Taylor, like, give him the football. And I think that's kind of what Virginia did for the most part this year.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of nitpicking with individual plays, but I think overall, the big picture for this offense this year, I can't really have too many qualms with it. I think there is a point there with Jamal Edgerrin because I was talking to Andrew Adelson from ESPN about it. Like, he's a big guy, 6'3", 220, just feed him the ball more. He didn't have a lot of drops this year, and the times that he caught it were big moments, usually on third down. So that's a guy that you want to get the ball to.
I think they also wanted him to play a little angrier too. I think they wanted to see that out of him also. But maybe he could achieve that next season. Maybe he becomes more of a big time target for them next season. And I guess depending on what Trell decides to do, my estimation would be that he returns. That would be my guess if I had to guess right now. But they could have a pretty good receiving core again and run it back with the same group. Harris is a really good player when he's healthy. I mean, he's
Extremely
excellent.
good. No, he
And
had.
Edgerrin with another season under his belt in the offense could be even better.
Yeah, I do think that there's like, and when I say meat on the bone, there's always at the end of the season stuff that you could have done differently, even if
Yes.
you went 12-0. So I think that's just another facet of this offense that I'd be really interested to see with those guys potentially coming back. Can they take another step there? All right, the next football-based question we got is from Fazdy, who Morris had only two rushing attempts against Duke. This has been a big talking point all year, Greg. What did
Yeah.
Duke do to take the weapon away, and what can we do to mitigate it against Missouri? So the question basically is, Morris and his legs, and this has been a question all season long, especially since that Florida State game when he scored three touchdowns on the ground in that game, and I think that kind of triggered a lot of people, like, that's a huge part of what this offense has to do. But whether it be injuries, whether it be just play calling situations, it hadn't happened. I thought in the Virginia Tech game that might have been his second best running game of the
Oh,
season.
yeah.
The way that he lowered his left shoulder, that wasn't even the touchdown run. The touchdown run was great when he juked the defender out of his cleats, but when he lowered his left shoulder right there on the goal line, I thought that was one of the bigger plays of the game.
I do think Duke was prepared because I thought he ran the ball pretty well in Durham too. He picked his spots well in Durham in the previous matchup. I do think Duke was more than ready. It was something Manny Diaz had talked a lot about in the days leading up to the game. And then one thing Chandler told me this season was a lot of times with the quarterback run stuff, it's his call, whether to take off with the ball or throw it or look to throw it or whatever, throw it out of bounds. And he told me, I can't remember when it was. There was a stretch where he wasn't as running it maybe as frequently, maybe sometime in October. And he had told me, he's like, that's not really on Dez. He's like, it's on me to get the quarterback run game going with my decisions. So I think in part, maybe what he was seeing with Duke's defense is, they're there. They're watching me, and they are very aware of what I can do with my legs. I have to look to throw the football. So to me, that I think comes into play. A lot of those decisions were in Chandler's hands. I remember him telling me that in October and a couple of different times this season, that if he's not running the ball as much, it's not on Dez. It's on him and his decision making.
He did have one choice in that the ACC championship game. I think it was the second two on the goal line, where he pulled the ball in that situation, and that did not work out. I think there was a little bit of a, bobble with the kind of keeping it, and it didn't work out in that place. So that was the one time he tried to keep it. But like you said, like, I thought the thing that Duke did really good in that matchup is the contain on Chandler Morris in that game, because even when he was on a pass play, like, they were forcing him back the
Back.
field. Like, they are forcing him back. They weren't letting him, like he has done so many times this year, kind of break that contain and get outside and make a play on the run. They're pushing him back, and when you're a smaller quarterback at 6 feet tall, that's hard to it, and you get pushed back 20 yards down the field, that's a hard pass to make.
No
And I thought
doubt.
that's what Duke did a really good job of in that game, and so maybe that's a lesson for Missouri to learn for the bowl game coming up, and it'll be interesting to see kind of how Virginia can respond to that kind of strategy.
Oh yeah, no, I'm with you, and we talked about it. Like, Duke was ready, to Duke second time around. Duke was more prepared than it was the first time. I think they were a little disappointed with how they played in that first game too. I was surprised the Duke played as well as it did a couple weeks, in Charlotte against Virginia. But Manny Diaz and his staff did a good job of adjusting and scheming to stop the Hoos.
This one, we're going to go into the roster building section of it now, but
Okay.
this one is kind of what everyone on our message board has been talking about. Who has eligibility? It's the
Oh
biggest
boy.
question in college football and college sports in general, is who has eligibility right now. And so our Chris Wright took a look, went through some of the numbers, went down the list, and some of these guys may be pursuing another year, some of them may not be. But we've mentioned a few of them already: Trell Harris, Jamal Edrian. Those are guys that have an additional year available to them. Kind of looking through the list right now that he put out there. Drake Metcalf has another year.
Yep.
And so there's a bunch on there, and there's some younger guys on the two deep too. He kind of just went through the two deep. There's guys that missed this season that have another year of eligibility. Xavier Brown, Dakota Twitty. Then there's I think this one, Mikhail Boley, another one.
Yeah, he'll have an NFL decision to make.
He does. Yeah, and I mean, NFL decisions are tough. we'll have to see, we'll just have to see how that goes. But that's on the offensive side of the ball. Then you've got on the defensive side a lot of guys with eligibility there. So I mean, just how are you looking at this roster right now and the guys that have those additional years?
Okay, yeah, that's I spent the last couple of days digging into eligibility too, like everyone else. There are a lot of players who are older and have a choice to make whether to continue playing college football or not, right? Mitchell Melton's in that mix. Jack Whitmer would still have another year if he wanted it. Drake Metcalf. There are some older players who have those types of choices to make, which, that's some of it's NFL, a Josie, Noah Josie, Mikhail Boley, of course. Some of it's are you ready to play in the NFL? Some of it is, are you ready to move on with life? Like I think about Melton and Boley, and I'm like, those guys have had some injury history in their careers. Like, is it worth them coming back to school to continue to build their draft stock? Or do you take what you can get at this point, knowing that you've been hurt in the past? Right? That, like, so there are those types of life choices that these players have to make, their agents, their families. Those are the types of decisions that players are working through now, right? There's Chandler Morris's situation too. Could he get a seventh year? We will see. I don't know how clear cut that is. I have not heard exactly what's going on with that yet, but that's something to watch as well. I think for Virginia, as I just kind of perused the roster, like the obvious before some of these decisions are made, like the obvious needs to me are running back, offensive line, and defensive back. Those are the three positions where Virginia has to restock through the transfer portal, Preston. The running back position, you're going to lose Harrison Whaley and Jamari Taylor, whose eligibility simply expired.
That's
That's
done
a
and dusted. Yeah.
clear cut as it gets.
It's the easiest position on the roster to make sense of.
Correct. And behind, like, what's left on the roster, Xavier Brown, who's coming off an ACL, Noah Vaughn, who's coming off an ankle, and Zay Davis, who's just a young guy, right? To me, based on how Virginia's offense operated and functioned in 2025, they're going to have to get players who profile similarly to Taylor and Whaley, proven, productive, and who've stayed healthy throughout their careers to ensure themselves some depth at that position. I would think at least two running backs through the portal is on the table.
Yeah,
That
well,
logically.
and Tony said as much in his signing day press conference because I asked him about the running back position. He said, "Yeah, we're gonna have to go get one or two guys, and Xavier Brown, Noah Vaughn, understand that. Like, that's just what the position dictates that you need now. You
100%.
can't, you just can't risk ending up in a situation like they were in Blacksburg a couple years ago." And I think, I always say the thing, coming out of news, like something, people only change when something bad happens. That situation in Blacksburg with the running back position, that was the something bad happening, and they've learned from that. And they're going to have depth at that position. Offensive line is an interesting one. Obviously, they put a ton of resources in that last offseason. And honestly, like one of those guys, maybe two with Wigginton included, Brady Wilson, the other one, really made an impact on the offensive line. It was a lot of guys that had been in the program for a number of years. But yeah, like you mentioned before, a lot of those guys have decisions to make about coming back as well. Like they still have eligibility left. So, Mitch, where do you see on the offensive line? And we haven't even talked about like kind of the, I guess, the thing hanging out there with Monroe Mills and Mykealen Thomas hanging out there. What is their decision going to be? What do they want to do?
That's the question. Like, is Mills going to stick around if he comes back? I know he's been very heavily involved this season as someone who helps his teammates, who's someone who is around, is in the offensive line meetings. Thomas was a great player at Arkansas State. Does he want to get healthy and try to prove himself at UVA? That to me is interesting because if those two guys decide to come back, you probably have some you at least have some good tackle options. My guess at this point would be Boley goes to the NFL. I don't know that for sure yet. That's just my educated estimation. That's my educated estimation. I don't know firmly one way or the other yet. That would be my guess. Josie, maybe he comes back. I don't know. They're going to need a center. Could that be as simple as Drake Metcalf, right? Could that be your answer at center? However you spin it, though, you're going to need veterans. You're going to need some veteran old linemen because, Wilson is out the door. He's out of eligibility. Wigginton is out the door. He's out of eligibility. Wyatt is gone. I know he didn't play all that much for Virginia, but he was someone that at least had played college football in his career. And that was a big part of last offseason for them, was making sure their numbers and their experience was good, even behind starters. So he's an option. Ethan Sipe could come back. He could come back too. So there are some options. Where's Grant Ellinger in his development? Is Ben York a starter next year? Like, those are all questions that have to be answered for the O-line. But I think in the end, especially depending on how some of these decisions go, you could have a, new wave of transfer offensive linemen come in.
It's never a bad spot to reinforce. We saw all the injuries they had before they even got to the season this year, so there's no guarantees, especially when you bring in that depth. Tight end's another one. I think that they'll have to go get another body with Sage Ennis moving on, and then Dakota Twitty, possibly coming back as well. But with his injury history, you want to have some options there. And John Rogers is a good young player in the program, and they got some other tight ends in that room that are younger. So that's another one. Defensive side of the ball, you said defensive backs. I was interested by that.
I mean, to me, it's pretty clear cut. You lose Clary, Christian Charles. Let's see, who else do you lose back there? Jordan Robinson, Devin Neal.
Devin Neal.
That's a pretty
It
good
is.
crew. Jason Brevard is
Jason
gone.
Pavard too.
So there are five players who played meaningful snaps for you. I don't know. Like, maybe you're confident in some of your younger players, but I still think you have to operate in the sense that they were better when they had older experienced players. That's what it's always going to come back to for me, is that you got to have older experienced players. And with that much production walking out the door, that's critical for at least how I see it.
Yeah, safety is going to be a big one. Devin Neal was such a solid contributor from day one last year. I mean, he was all
Great
ACC
player.
guy. Like, they're going to need someone to replace him. You got Minter coming back. We talked about Corey Costner earlier in that spur role. So, I agree. I think that's the spot they're going to have to look at. I do feel better because the corners actually seem like you got something there, which you have not had in a couple years, with Carnley and potentially Donovan Platt too. So.
Jam Jackson
Jam Jackson coming off
and
injury.
maybe
We'll
Jamarik Morris, depending
he was,
on
and he's a
what
guy
his decision.
that impressed them in camp before he got his injury too. Like, he might have been one of the top guys at the corner spot before he got hurt. I'm trying to, I guess, defensive line. You lose Rickert there, Jameer Carter,
Maybe Melton.
maybe Melton.
I think they're okay at defensive tackle between Britton, Hammond, Osborne, Sechon John.
They had a lot of guys at defensive tackle this
I think they're
year.
okay there. But they probably need an end or two. Like, it's not as glaring to me as running back, O-line, and the defensive backfield. But I agree with you, particularly if they lose Melton.
That if they lose Melton, I think they'll have to get one or two guy or two guys probably. They'll probably look to get at least one though. Linebacker, you got Cam Robinson, Landon Danley, Caleb Hardy, Maddox Marcellus. Looks pretty solid there.
I think they're okay there.
Well, I mean, we went deep into that one, but that's the one that everyone's like asking about right now. But this is an interesting one from QB Sacker, talking about kind of, Tony Elliott's, phrase, heart and the principles and the program and everything with the transfer portal now. How do, quote, we find UVA guys who value Virginia culture and kind of fit into this team? And I think that's honestly been one of the biggest reasons for their success this year is they found guys that bought into their culture, and they seem to do a pretty good job at that.
That's a great question, because it's especially this year where the transfer portal is a little bit different than last year. right? I mean, so a lot of these players are already announcing their intent to go in the portal, which is fascinating because, you know, behind the scenes, the agents are working with schools on coming up with deals. So I know in the past, Virginia had been so big on getting players to the school, right? Getting players in for visits so that Virginia could meet them, identify, you know, who they are as people, what they look like, what's their size, what's their height, what's their weight, how do they fit with the culture of the team. Like, I remember last year when they were recruiting all those offensive linemen in the portal, what were they doing on their visit? They were going out to dinner with Noah Josey, right? And meeting a bunch of the old line. He was such a big factor in that they had a, you know, a pinpoint of a player, you know, maybe each position group to say, like, yeah, this guy will fit, or maybe not this guy. So that's how they kind of ironed through. And then, you know, Tony would meet them, the staff would meet them, of course, whether it's a recruiting, you know, the guy who'd been recruiting them, the position coach, whatever. They had a method and a plan. They went after mostly older guys who played a lot of football, who had some significant experience and could kind of tell their stories basically, and
Yeah.
how they could make it work. So I that's going to be an interesting development, right? The portal's open for 2 weeks, beginning January 2nd. How quickly can Virginia get those kids on grounds for a visit? How much interaction is there going to be, or are some of those deals already going to be done?
Yeah.
Is it going to be a simple payday, or is there going to be a legitimate recruiting process? I'm not just saying that with Virginia, but I'm saying that like holistically
Oh,
across the
yeah.
board, because I, you know, just from messaging an agent or two over the last couple of days, I'm thinking some of these deals are going to be done.
There's going to have to be a lot more back channeling with agents
Yes.
than there ever has been before, and there's been a lot before. Like,
Yeah.
that, don't get this isn't new. This has been happening the last couple of years. It's just going to have to be more prevalent. And this is kind of what we see with like NFL or NBA free agency. Like,
Yeah.
wait, the free agency just started. How are all these guys signing these like big multi-million-dollar deals or whatever? It's well, because the agents have been talking.
They've
They're
been done.
agents are allowed to talk. Like, that has been going on.
That's their
So
job. Yep.
there's going to have to be a lot more of that, and it's going to go quicker. It's going to, like, they keep saying speed dating in like the past couple of years. It's going to get quicker, faster. You're not going to get a chance to know these guys as
No
much,
date,
and
no date, Preston, just the
no
marriage.
date. It's like you know what, I don't know, one of those dating shows like Love is Blind or something like that. That's what college football is now. You get married and you'll figure it out along the way. Guess what? If it doesn't work out year one, there's always the transfer portal next year too. You can always get a divorce and
Boy.
go
Oh,
across
boy.
your separate ways. But
Yeah.
it kind of ties into another question that someone asked. RVA Who fan, I'm curious if we're still using the third party company for player evaluations. I think it helped us with slotting for NIL money, and if other schools are using the same software, how are we taking advantage of the data in a different way? That has been part of Virginia's process, and you know, I've asked many times about it, and you know, they always, you know, they don't love talking about it. They say they have their own in-house evaluations, and that's true. But they do use a third party evaluation to kind of help identify players they want to go after. But that's when I'm going to talk about like the character part of it. That's when the coaching staff, that's their evaluation to make, is the character part.
Yeah, and I think something that also helped them last cycle was Scott Pioli's involvement,
Yeah.
right? Virginia's dated GM Tyler Jones and the assistant GM Justin Sparrows. They also worked with Scott Pioli, former NFL front office exec, right? Been with the Patriots, a couple other teams. You know, he has some expertise, and they leaned into that, and I think that was positive, that positive step for the program. To get some different eyes. And I think Tony had mentioned to me at one point, Tony Elliott, that it was kind of just confirmation that like a lot of what they were doing was right on.
Yeah.
And he was able to help with some other things too. So I think that's another third party. I know it's not the analytics and the data,
Yeah.
but I think that's important, right? Some experience in kind of operating in free agency.
One of the things that I think, and everyone wants to talk about sustainability, is this a one-hit wonder kind of season? The one thing that I have taken away from a lot of conversations throughout the season with a lot of different people is the types of players that they're going after. Like, those aren't always the guys that the big schools and like the SEC money is looking at necessarily, like a Daniel Rickert, a Jamari Taylor. And Taylor had, a lot of schools that were interested in him, but like they weren't like the big brand names that like blow up on Twitter as soon as the guy hits the portal. They're guys that like they scout are like, this is a really good fit for our team, and we think like his ability translates up a level.
Yeah, they've done really well with that. Even going back to like Tyler Neville a couple years ago, brought him in from Harvard, and he was sought after a little bit, but they found why he could be a really good fit at Virginia. And I think too, even the players that, because how many times do you see like the player from the big giant program that just doesn't really work out? Like they found a good one in Melton. Like he great character from the air, from the DMV, like understood what Virginia was all about. Didn't try to, force his he came with a national title, but didn't try to force like the Ohio State culture on his teammates. Just kind of fit in, and when his teammates would ask him about his experiences, he'd talk about it. He was a really natural fit, and he was motivated, right, to prove that he could play. And he really the motor was fantastic. He was one of the better defensive linemen in the league. I thought at least, I think PFF had him as the sixth highest graded defensive lineman this year in the ACC. So they found players like that. Even Jaden Thomas, like he didn't catch a lot of passes. Did he catch three passes all year?
I think so, yeah.
But when they asked him to go return punts against Cal, when Cam Ross wasn't doing it, he was able to do it and impact the game. So I thought, Jaden Thomas had impact at times, which helped them. And he was a good contributor. So it's fine. It's a mix of guys who've been around, been in some big programs, and then some guys who were ready to move up and ready to kind of unleash what they can do on the larger scale.
Yeah, I think sometimes the analytics, it doesn't pick the player exactly. It tells you like, all right, this is some interesting like facets of what he can do and how it would fit into your system. The big question, I think a lot of people want to know going into this offseason, especially, I'll acknowledge it, Virginia Tech announcing their big $20 million donation. And those are just becoming more and more common across college sports right now is 141 Lyle asked, how sustainable is our money for the transfer portal?
I think it's good. This year only helps. At least from what I've been told, is that this year's success is only reason for encouragement on that front. If people were dumping in money and it didn't work out, they'd be less inclined. They'd be less inclined to continue to contribute. But when people see that it's succeeding, they're more eager to hop on board. So that's at least what I've been told. I've been told Virginia's in a good spot. It'll be very competitive like they were last year in the portal. And I think on Virginia Tech's part, it's a realization that you have to. It was the same realization Virginia had last December. You better start. Paying players, or otherwise you're going to get left behind.
Yeah, that's where the game is, and credit to Virginia for realizing it last year, so that you could have a season like this. Other programs realized it a year earlier or 2 years earlier. So like it's everyone's kind of playing a little bit of catch up here and be like, okay, yeah, like we tried to avoid it. We didn't want to get into this like this game, but that's the game, man. Like
Oh,
that's what it
100%.
is. You gotta embrace it. You gotta get into it. And it's not like, oh, we'll dabble in it. No, you gotta get in it. Like you gotta dive fully into it.
I think even Tony, like, he was asked about the portal and NIL during one of the press conferences leading into the ACC championship game, and even he's like, I don't know how I feel about it, but it's kind of like you got to do it. It's just the way of life. And then he also said that this year's team taught him that they could build that he could build through the portal if need be. And I think that's an important takeaway when you think about Tony's background, right? He came from Clemson, which notoriously doesn't take a lot of transfers, right? They had a good one this year, and Will Held from Purdue, transfer defensive end. But traditionally, Dabo Swinney has not taken a ton of transfers. That's the program Tony Elliott came from. But I think he's embraced the portal more so, right? At first out of necessity, and then, last year when they had the influx of cash, because they could, and then that, and they needed to win and improve the talent and depth. And then this year's teams kind of taught him, like, you could bring a group of guys together quickly, and make it work and win some football games. So I think that's an important thing to remember too, is that because it worked, the head coach is on board with it also.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a lot of roster building talk, and I like you like to say that for the off season, but it's kind of enveloped the month of December now. Even with the transfer portal not starting until January, that's just kind of people move on. They're like, all right, I know there's another football game out there to play. I know the playoffs haven't even started yet, but let's talk transfer portal. Let's talk roster building. So that's a little bit. Obviously, we'll have a lot more of that coming up. Greg's always going to be on top of that stuff at the Daily Progress, so you can catch the stuff there. But one last one, fun question. Aishu, who asked the first question, comes back. What two plays, one positive, one negative, could have had the butterfly effect on the season?
I gotta think
So
about
there's a
this.
lot of good ones here. I'll go first with
You go first.
the negative. Okay, I'll start negative here because I'm thinking of Pervard's interception, the one-handed athletic interception that we were talking about earlier against Florida State. If that doesn't happen, Florida State's right there in the red zone, about to go in and score. How does that change the game? And if that happens and Virginia doesn't win that game against Florida State, that's kind of the big kind of jumping off point that Virginia needed for this season. So that's the one I'm like, I mean, if he touches that, just like even if he tips it and just doesn't catch it, like that's still a massive play there.
Yeah, I think as far as a positive play on the season, gosh, Cam Robinson, I could think of a few that he made that really helped them. Maybe what came first? I think it was I actually think it was Platt's
Fumble
fumble
return, yeah.
return at Louisville that allowed them to get off to a good start on a day the offense wasn't really humming.
Yeah.
So I would think that because to play from behind against Louisville, and at the time, right, Louisville was pretty good. Isaac Brown was still healthy. Chris Bell was catching
Yeah.
everything.
Everything.
Everything. Miller Moss isn't great, but still serviceable. Like to play from behind against Louisville, I think would be a difficult task for any team, especially at that point in the season. So I'll go, them being able to build a lead against Louisville. I know the game eventually went into overtime and Virginia had to win in overtime, but it allowed them to play from ahead.
Yeah. All right. On the positive side, like what could have changed the season? I think honestly, I have to go back to that NC State game. If Chandler Morris, puts that pass anywhere else than where he did, and they don't throw the interception, and maybe later on they score a touchdown after that, just
Yeah.
because I think like Virginia kind of got a little bit later start because of that NC State loss early in the season. And I know it drove a lot of, ACC fan, like, well, they lost to NC State. Like that should count was like, even if they finished 7-2 in the conference, they still would have been in the ACC championship game. But anyway, I digress. Like, I think that game early on in the season maybe changed a little bit, but honestly, if you want to talk anything butterfly effect, you go back to the ACC championship game. Pick a number of plays. I'll pick the false or the offsides on the punt on in the first quarter,
Yeah,
and
Jacob
it may
Holmes.
seem like very, minimal in the long run of things, but I think allowing that Duke drive to continue on like that kind of put Virginia behind the eight ball from the get go.
What if Daniel Kalen would have scored against Wake Forest?
That's another good one. Yeah.
Do they win that game?
Yeah,
Do they win that game? Or if they don't give up the punt return?
I was gonna say if one guy makes a good angle and tackle on that punt return, then I think that's probably the better one for me because I don't think Wake Forest ever gets into the end zone otherwise.
No, so they probably win that game. And then I still don't think they would have gotten in the playoff if they would have won the Wake Forest game but
Yeah.
lost the ACC title game. But there's definitely more of an argument for it. So I don't know. That to me is one I'm sure Virginia would like back.
Yeah, I think in the long run, those NC State and Wake Forest losses, like you
Yeah.
want to have those, but Would they have made that much of a difference in the playoff conversation and everything? I don't really think so.
Not this year.
That's why the ACC championship game probably is like you're focusing on those plays because like those would have actually made a difference on the
Yeah.
end result of the season. So that was a fun one though. A little jog through the memory of what happened this year. A lot of crazy stuff, man. Like we've seen some crazy stuff in covering this team, but this year there was like just a lot of it in good
Oh,
ways.
I mean the amount of like different versions of game stories that I wrote that just will never see the light of day. I think back to Florida State and Louisville and Cal. The different ways those games ended
Yeah.
that just totally altered the way my story flowed.
I wish
That
we
I had
could
to
have
completely rewrite.
gone back and like saved those at the time and just kind of look back at how we
Oh, I
thought all
have
these.
them. I have them. They're just buried.
They're okay.
Yeah, they're different versions. They're below the original version. What I ended up running. I
Yeah.
have them. Maybe I'll send them to you, and you can share them with your board.
We'll do like a whole book on the sea. What could have been sea? All right. Well, a lot more to go this season still. We still have one more game in the Gator Bowl, and I think it's going to be a really good game between these two teams. Missouri's,
Yeah.
they just lost an offensive coordinator, who's now going to be the head coach at Washington State, who Virginia played earlier this season. So small
Yeah.
world there.
Yeah, no, yeah, I think it'll be a good, I think it's a neat matchup for Virginia. You're
It
getting
is.
to test yourself against an SEC opponent. Missouri has quality players. I was looking, and I know Tony had mentioned in one of his remarks that Missouri's just so big. They are big up front. So it'll be that to me is a test. Offensive line, defensive line. You want to see where you stack up? Let's see how it looks against an SEC squad. Missouri, they had playoff hopes at the beginning of the year too. And maybe if they don't lose their quarterback, Bo Prabula, maybe they're playing for a little more. Maybe they got to 9 wins instead of 8 or 10 instead of 8.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be a good test. The ties between the staffs are fascinating. Eli Drinkwitz's background is very similar to Tony's, right? Ties to Gus Malzahn and Chad Morris, Elliott, of course, too. And
Yeah.
then Drink and Kitchings work together at NC State, and that's where a lot of the wide zone stuff that both teams run was developed. So there are some neat things with this game, and then just the fact that Virginia hasn't played in a bowl game since 19. It's
Yeah.
an important step for the program. I know people are disappointed about the playoff, but I mean, just think of all the years that have gone by without appearing in a bowl game. I mean, all the things the program's been through, from the transition from Mendenhall to Tony, and then from with the tragedy, and then the years of just not great football that followed, while Tony's trying to figure it out, and the program's trying to figure out how to pour resources in. This is an important step, for Virginia to go to a bowl game. And
Yeah.
if you can win an 11th game, I think that's something people can be proud of.
Yeah, I think Chris said it really well in the last podcast that we did about the bowl game is like maybe in future years, bowl games just don't matter to Virginia. It matters this year because like you
Yeah.
haven't done it in a few years. So like this one will matter. Maybe in future years, Virginia will get to that point where, they don't care about bowl games and hopefully not throwing a fit throughout college football like Notre Dame did this year. That's a little shot at the Irish there for you to end this podcast. But Greg, this was fun. Glad we got to do it. I know you've got a lot more coming up before we get down to Florida and Jacksonville and get to this bowl game. But as always, follow Greg Medea on social media and you can read stuff over at thedailyprogress.com.
Thanks, Preston.
All right, that'll wrap it up. Hit the bell icon and subscribe on YouTube to the Who's On podcast. Follow, subscribe, and leave some 5-star reviews over on Apple and Spotify. We'll be back later in the week with former UVA safety Quinn Blanding joining the show. We'll see you then.